The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Coming up on this week's show. Pre-season is underway, Chris is packing his bags for a trip to the Alps, but there's no sign of George. Tifo's Seb Stafford Bloor is here to talk about Newcastle United's sensible transfers. No, honestly. And green lights and green and white. What's happening behind the scenes this summer? Hello, welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, and hello to you, Chris Woff. How are you doing, son? You all right?
Hello, Taylor. Yes, I am fan dabby dozy, thank you. How are you?
Oh, hey, I'm not bad. I'm not that good, but I'm pretty good. I'm not a fan dabby dozy, not quite, but I'm all right. I'm getting there. It's been a nice weekend. How are you doing anyway? Are you managing through June and into July now? It's weird being a football journalist at this time of year, isn't it?
It is weird at this time of year, but it's also nice because George isn't around. So it's in some ways, I feel like life has improved. I haven't got George whinging every day. You know the players. Most of the non internationals return on Wednesday, which is still before George returns, because he's just adamant that he's not going to be around.
Refusing to engage with football, isn't he? Until at least the second week of July. Bless him. He's earned that right, though. He's one of the old school now, isn't he? Do you know what? I'll write when I'm ready, and you can wait for me. That's basically the Colton effect.
That's exactly. Our editors would say exactly the same about him as well. So yeah.
It'll be lovely to have you back, George. We can't wait to see you. We're looking forward to having your smiling face and sunny disposition back on the podcast, as always. Chris, you've just mentioned there, players returning back to training. The Sven Botman transfer has been confirmed as well since last week. And, we did have references to Batman in there. I hope it didn't upset you too much. But it's good
news.
Did
you hijack the club's social media account or something?
I can neither confirm nor deny that particular rumour. But yeah, let's say there was a call to the bat phone made, and I picked up and responded. So yeah. But yeah, players coming back, training starts, pre-season is in full swing. Botman is in, and Newcastle are looking at other targets now as well. And we're going to have plenty of transfer chat in a little while, but it's all systems go, Chris.
It is, yeah. The players returned, non-internationals anyway, returned on Friday. They had sort of pre-season testing that you would have to see they have markers, as they call them, throughout the course of the year. Certain things to do with how high you can jump in a certain way. And they do a sort of beep test as well, back and forth. So all of that, they returned on Friday for that, and then had a couple of training sessions as well, and they've trained over the weekend. And it's been great to see the club again showing some of that to supporters. There's been a couple of YouTube and NUFC TV videos of both what happened on that first day of training and also behind the scenes with Sven Botman arriving at Newcastle, showing a little bit about, which we chatted a little bit about the medical last week, showed him and Paul, Dr. Paul Catterson, the club doctor, discussing what was going to happen in terms of MRI scans. He's going to check his heart, all of those sorts of things. He had a tour of the training ground, then went to the stadium.
Do they do the cup and cough, please, Sven? Do they do that one with it? Or is that just my doctor who does that?
I think it's just your doctor. I think they have a bit more sort of high-tech sort of way of measuring things at a Premier League football level.
Fair enough. I mean, they're missing out, but there you go.
But yeah, I mean, the Botman deal, I know last week there was some fans who, during the course of the week, were getting a little bit concerned because he'd arrived on the Monday, the deal had been agreed the previous Friday, and Newcastle said that it was going to be completed later that week. It was completed on July the 1st, which seems to have been more led from the Leela. They wanted the deal done, confirmed by the end of June, but they actually wanted to go through on July the 1st, seemingly, according to people in France, to do with sort of financial reasons and the French sort of financial year ticking from one to another. But the deal had been completely done. It was all sorted. And I understand
you, Chris,
the fans
you know Newcastle fans on Twitter, you know how level-headed and sensible we all are. It was when you read that sentence which said, a deal has been done in principle, and underneath the replies to the tweet was just loads of people screaming, what does that mean? don't know what it means. Has he signed or not? That's all people wanted to know. But yeah, we got there in the end.
He is a Newcastle, and he was very impressive in his first interview. He hasn't yet been put up in terms of an unveil, and neither's Nick Pope. But Botman said that it was probably the best day of his life, is what he said, in terms of signing for Newcastle. So that's, I mean
he got dragged in from his holiday in Mallorca to come to come to drizzly Newcastle and sign a bit of paper and got sent back. Best day of my life. Amazing. Yeah, are you sure?
Well, he seems excited by the prospect, and he has excited for him to be here. It feels like a big signing that gives Newcastle momentum at a time when the players are returning, a feel-good factor, that sort of upping the intensity and really upping the competition within the squad. So yes, I think they're in a good place ticking into the start of July, which as of 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think there was a slight nerves behind the scenes as to where they were, but they've had a very productive fortnight.
There's been talk about which position he's going to take as well, hasn't there? I mean, he's a big long lad, isn't he? He's a big, tall boy. And him and Dan Byrne, that would have to be the tallest centre-back partnership in the Premier League, I'd imagine. But there's been talk about him, maybe he's not playing that role. He's left-footed, he plays as a left-sided centre-back. Did Eddie Howe speak about this at all? Has there been any chat about where Sven Botman fits in?
Howe hasn't actually spoken about it yet. We haven't seen him since he's returned to pre-season either. But in terms of what I'm told and from having spoken to people, the suggestion was in January it was very much they wanted a left-sided centre-back. Botman was the first choice. They obviously tried for Carlos and eventually they got Dan Byrne. Whereas this summer, Botman again was the top choice, but if they hadn't managed to get Botman, they were a bit more receptive to looking at sort of right-sided centre-backs as well. And the thinking with Botman is that he can play very much, first of all, as an out-and-out left-sided centre-back. That's where he's played a lot of his football, and that's where I'd expect him to play early on. But he's although he's better with his left foot because he's after left foot, he is good with his right foot as well. And I do think longer term they see it as the possibility he could play on the side, on the right of the two. And so therefore, it looks like, at least after an initial bedding in period where Botman may not start every week, it'll probably be Botman plus Ian Other, whether that is Fabian Scher to the right of him or whether that's Dan Byrne to the left of him, and then Jamal Lascelles probably as backup, although I'm sure Lascelles will try and make sure that he can push himself back up the order. I suppose the issue he's going to have is that he's not naturally as gifted with his feet as the others are, but looking like a very strong department now, centre-back.
Fair play. Well, lots of excitement and lots of things to talk about. There'll be more transfer chat in a little while. But of course, at the moment, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and you get full access to all of our great writing and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts as well. And don't worry if you do enjoy the adverts, which I know some of you do. You can still hear those on the places where you normally get your podcasts, so don't worry about that. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Sign up now. Come with me, Maggie. So, regular listeners will be familiar with T4, the Athletic's brainiac kid brother, and it's a delight to extend our traditional pod on the time welcome to one of their hotshot team. It's Seb Stafford-Bluer. Seb, hello.
Hi, Taylor. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks very much for coming on, man. Where in the world are you?
I am in North Germany in the world.
Wow.
I live in Hamburg with my wife, so I'm over here in Europe.
Lovely stuff. Hamburg, an incredibly historic football place, steeped in football history, and none more so than our own very own Kevin Keegan, who is still a cult figure over there, isn't he?
He sure is, and there's a couple of ways of reading that. Like, first, obviously, is Keegan, back-to-back European Player of the Year, but also hasn't gone super well for HSV ever since he left. They haven't actually won anything, a major trophy, since I was born. Which is kind of damning. And they're one of those clubs who find a way of tripping themselves up and who, when they get embroiled in scandals, they tend to be ridiculous scandals. so if anyone listening wants to look up Backpack Gate, that's a really good example of the kind of state of things. On their way back, hopefully. But
Very familiar, this, Chris, doesn't it? So it's almost like I've now found my second team in Germany.
It is. It's very Newcastle United. The only difference is, I suppose, Kevin Keegan actually did win something when he was at Hamburg. Didn't quite at Newcastle, transformed history of the club, but didn't quite deliver it in exactly the same way as there. But yeah, affection shared for Kevin Keegan, and also, unfortunately, a shared ability to just cock things up quite regularly on the football pitch.
The lovable Kevin Keegan. Tivo's annual agony on column for the Premier League club Sensible Transfers. It's well underway, and the Newcastle United edition will be out next Monday. That's July the 11th. Seb, what's the concept behind this?
The idea is to kind of indulge the fancy a little bit, to apply a few real-world conditions, things like budget and availability and what's realistic, and just come up with some, I suppose, recommended sounds a bit pompous and a bit up ourselves. That's not what we're going for. Just kind of, what would you do if you were given the controls? A little bit of fun and, find what the areas of weakness are in each team. And, you know, get our scouting caps on, data caps on, and try and recommend a few players. Just, also sometimes kind of fun to recommend players that, not that people haven't heard of, but who are a little bit off the beaten track or who are outside of, you know, the top five leagues. It's been a lot of fun. Obviously, a bit more fun for Newcastle this year because we've had a bit more, parameters have been a little bit wider than usual. Yeah. It's we try and get through and try and, I suppose... when you recommend players, it's very easy to go down the rabbit hole of just chucking data at people and slapping them around the face with statistics. We try and kind of make it a little bit anecdotal too, so that people can get a sense of what players like to look at as well, if they haven't come across them before.
So, can you give us any of those names? Anyone in particular, or are you holding them back?
Absolutely not, Taylor. No, this is made perfectly clear before I came on. This is like my, like when rock stars come and they demand a kilo of cocaine before they do.
Your rider.
Mine is that I'm unwilling to reveal any sensible transfer specs. It's very rock and roll, but yeah,
it's wonderful. I love it.
I can tell you kind of some of the thought process. Would that be a decent substitute for?
It's a compromise.
So what we tried to do this time is Newcastle have a couple of needs, and they're fairly obvious. We tried to balance kind of what would work from a footballing perspective with what would work from a kind of reputation building idea, so that, you can develop the first team, you can become more competitive, but at the same time, you're trying to create a signpost to other players in the future. So right, he plays there, well maybe I'll go there too. And so that's been kind of a fun thing to add into the mix this year. But we hope you kind of hope it's a nice mix of the two when it comes out.
I mean, Seb, at Newcastle, Steve Nixon, the head of recruitment, I suppose Fenbottom would be a prime example of this, previously had players he really liked and looked at but really never thought would be able to sign in the previous regime.
Yeah.
Now they've sort of been brought up to the fore, the likes of Bruno as well. Is that been the case as well over the last sort of couple of editions for Tifo, that you'd have had people previously you would have just discounted immediately and said Newcastle have got no chance either budget-wise or in terms of offering a project, whereas now maybe they can entice some of those European-based players?
Yeah, definitely, Chris, definitely. I mean, I'm sure I'm not speaking out of turn here, but I've written a fair share of anti-Mike Ashley articles in the past, so I think it's fair to say that previously Newcastle were a club where if you were a player, you probably went there so that you could go somewhere else in a couple of years' time. I'm trying to be respectful. It's just, I think that's the way it was thought of as a club because
it's
you're
completely
not,
right. It's correct.
Yeah, you're not competing for anything. You're not really going anywhere. The objective was to stay in the Premier League, sure. But then for players, particularly players from abroad, it was the kind of the landing spot in the Premier League for some of them. Whereas now, what's being sold is entirely different. It's this is where the club may go from here, this is what it may do. And also if you arrive there, say you're a centre forward and you want to go to Newcastle, well now you can be guaranteed of pretty decent supply, you'd imagine. Over the next couple of years, if you add in kind of creativity from wide positions or fullbacks you can cross, set piece experts, all these kind of things, all these little details that matter to professional footballers that guys like us don't necessarily consider. Caliber of teammate is a massive sell. But also, it might be a little bit early in the cycle to kind of to sort of aim at major trophies, maybe in a couple of years. But then you're selling a journey. Whereas before at Newcastle, always felt like, what are you going there to do? Just to sit there for a couple of years, get paid, probably not get paid as much as you could get paid elsewhere. There were still attractions to it. Newcastle's an amazing city, one of my favourite cities in England. But for a professional footballer, in the kind of the insulated worlds they live in, I don't know if the proposition was that strong. But now, yeah, night and day, obviously.
Well, Seb, you wrote the script for a one-off Newcastle video on the subject of stepping stone players, which is available on the T4 YouTube channel. Before we discuss that, let's have a little listen to a clip.
What is a stepping stone player? Well, to answer that, it's worth considering what happens to a club immediately after it receives new investment. Its capacity to acquire new players and pay their wages dramatically increases, but its attractiveness to the highest calibre of player does not, at least not in a way that's commensurate. And there are a couple of reasons for that lag. Most obviously, the appearance of wealth in football is rarely trusted immediately. The market, players and agents need time to be convinced of its authenticity, as they are the claimed ambition of any new owners. It takes time to establish that kind of trust. In addition, the newly acquired club may not be playing in the Champions League or even European football at all. Most desirable players are already in positive positions, and so promising opportunities on a delay, such as Champions League qualification within 3 years, is a more difficult sell. And day-to-day factors are important too. While a club might become wealthy overnight, its facilities may not be of good enough standard to attract players used to first-in-class luxury. Those kinds of issues can take years to rectify. Most often, however, the quality of the squad may be the biggest issue, and the lack of the quality to attract desirable reinforcements. Very few players are indifferent to the standard of their teammates, regardless of the salary on offer. A world-class centre-forward is unlikely to want to play for a team that doesn't create chances, for instance, and might be particularly reluctant to starve himself of a supply during a World Cup year. Still, personnel is the easiest weakness to address, but it does require a strategy. And that's where stepping stone players have their place.
And I watched this video the other day, and it's a really interesting watch. And we're talking about the likes of Dan Byrne and Kieran Trippier as well, to some extent. Although Kieran Trippier is a kind of, to us, that's a bit of a marquee signing. You know, that's someone who we didn't think we were capable of getting, but now we are.
Yeah.
And these are players that need to come in. And you use the example of Man City when they got taken over. It's a very different landscape now, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, like Man City. We went back to 2008 for that video and looked at kind of not just what they did in that first transfer window in the last kind of 24 hours when the Robinho thing happened, but also like what they did for the next couple of windows, which is like you kind of, and this was obviously, like you say, Taylor, look, it was a pre-FFP world. So you didn't have to think about things like wastage and profit and loss as much as you do now. But like you buy players with an aim of getting better so that in 6 months' time, a year's time, what you're selling is superior. Like you're able to kind of, maybe in the Man City context, you're able to attract someone like Roberto Mancini. You're able to sell your project to Yaya Toure, David Silva, like guys like that. And so you have people like, I suppose, Craig Bellamy in there and Wayne Bridge and Shea Given, like really good Premier League players, but like players who are going to be in there for, probably going to be first team regulars for about a year. Sometimes even less. I think I added it up in that video. Forgive me, I can't remember exactly how much it was, but I think between them, Bridge, Bellamy and Given made about 85 appearances for Man City in total.
Yeah, it wasn't loads.
It's that way of doing a couple of things. Firstly, like becoming better, obviously. But also, I don't think it's a secret that like City tried to weaken opponents on their way up. Like I think Gary Cook, their former CEO, talked about like the effect they had on Aston Villa. They've been pretty open about that. And you're quite right. Like the world is a bit different now financially for football clubs. There is a little bit more. There are a few more constraints, but you can see a little bit of that with Newcastle, like the Chris Wood signing. Good player, Chris Wood, no doubt, and player that Newcastle needed, but also super handy that it took Burnley's, you know, sort of not free scoring centre forward. Let's be fair, but very important part of their jigsaw away in the middle of a season in which they ended up getting relegated. It's just part of the equation, and it's interesting to see how a club manages that, but also how it manages that after the player has become not obsolete, but when he's already trying to be replaced by the club after 6 months, 12 months. It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, this is something that we're struggling with at the minute, because we have an awful lot of players on good money on contracts who, you know, they might have a couple of seasons left, but what's happened at the back end of the Ashley era is rather than dealing with those players and actively looking to move them on, they've extended the deals and just kicked it down the lane a bit further and let somebody else deal with the issue. And now we've got people like Dwight Gayle and you know, Jonjo Shelvey's coming in the last year of his contract as well. And we have an awful lot of players on an awful lot of money who we don't seem to be able to move on, and it's difficult.
Well, there's another dynamic in there as well. Like, you're absolutely right. It's really difficult because, like, if you're you're a player, if you're like one of those guys who you've just mentioned, you want to be part of it. You were signed for a different era and for a different purpose. And you've kind of been inherited by like a new regime and new management. And then say you're like a, Jonjo Shelvey, and you see some of these players coming in around you. Some of them might be on better money. Some of them might be on longer deals. Some of them might be taking your game time. You think, hang on, I've slogged to keep this club in the Premier League. And like, I dare say, with the greatest respect to some of the managers in the past, like great respect to Steve Bruce, like playing for Steve Bruce didn't look like fun. I mean, like particularly for someone like Jonjo Shelvey. No, but if you're a guy like who lives off his like with an expansive passing range, like quite an expressive player, do you want to play for Steve Bruce? That's not me denigrating what he is as a coach. It's just that's how he coaches and that's how he sets the team up. And the argument about whether that was right or wrong is one that you can have on a different podcast, not involving me.
That's fine.
I don't want any part of that. Right?
We've had that argument many times. Don't worry about it.
But then you think, you know, so where's my part of this? What, do I just get flogged off or does my contract get allowed to expire? Because I'm one of the reasons that the club is able to, you know, recruit a Bruno Guimarães. You know, okay, I'm, you know, it's a little bit of an abstract logic there, but you see what I'm getting at. It's a really tough thing to manage, I think. Must be.
Seb, you mentioned Bruno Guimarães. Obviously, we were both at St. Mary's on the night that they made his full Newcastle United debut. I mean, first of all, what did you make of him that night? And the ridiculous goal he scored, but also since, what have you made of him at Newcastle?
Yeah, he's a marvellous player. Like, Chris, I remember that night we sat next to each other at St. Mary's, and I was so excited to see him. And there was a moment, I can't remember the Southampton player it was, but someone absolutely rattled him in the first half. Someone had clearly been told, go through him, see if he can take it. And someone did and skittled him. And he got up and he just loved it. Immediately just loved it. He was like a boy at Christmas. He scored that fabulous goal that night. To be honest, he'd come up in a sensible transfer series before he went to Newcastle. We're not trying to sound smug, but he was just a world-class player. Like, and he was sitting there waiting to be taken from Lyon by sides like Arsenal, sides like Spurs, and they just, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but they were kind of hesitating around him. It'd be very difficult to argue that he wouldn't make either of those two teams better still now, despite what they may have done in the transfer window. Super impressed. Also, as a Spurs fan, hugely, hugely enjoyed his goal against Arsenal.
Yeah,
that was an excellent moment. Well done. But yeah, he's a terrific player. And he's one of those guys, like, so we talked about the stepping stone thing. Like, every now and again, you drop a guy in who is not a stepping stone player. He's just there for the long haul. He's like a guy that, I think I wrote on Twitter that signing Bruno Guimarães would have kept up Newcastle on its own. Like, he didn't need to do anything else. Like, sign someone like that because they're that good. And I think that's kind of been shown. He's better than I thought he was going to be. Not trying to pretend that I knew that what was coming, but he's... Yeah, he's super. A lot of teams are very envious of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's really, really taken to Newcastle, and Newcastle fans have really taken to him as well. He's one of those players that I sit and watch the games with my little boy, and my little boy is just enthralled by him. He just can't take his eyes off him. He's already a superstar as far as the kids are concerned, you know, and it's incredible. That's what you want, isn't it? You want someone who's got that sort of star quality, and he can also be someone who can attract other players into the club.
I suppose also, like, for your son, like, I mean, how many players like that has he seen in his lifetime in the flesh? Because that's the thing. Because like,
he has seen good players at Newcastle, you know. Sure. But we've never had somebody like that. I mean, we've had people like Johan Kabay and Hatton Ben Arfa and players like that. Well, you know, very talented guys. They don't inspire. They don't, you know, they don't give the kids somebody to look up to like that. That is a big thing for me.
I think so. Like, it's also like, it's different if you're able to go and watch these players live, because, like, you know, we've all seen them on television. But I remember when I was a boy, like, the first game I saw, first Tottenham game I went to, Jürgen Klinsmann played. I grew up loving Teddy Sheringham and loving watching him play and like guys like that. It's just different. Like, it's a level above, isn't it? Yeah, and you know, sort of with the greatest respect to guys like Johan Kabay in the past, I don't think, well, maybe they did, but I don't think many kids sort of pretend to be Johan Kabay in the playground. At least not as many who would now be Bruno Guimarães. Like, Johan Kabay is a super player, don't get me wrong. He was a wonderful footballer, but it's a star quality thing, isn't it? It's a difference between a very good footballer and a star of the game, who you can imagine becoming like a really world-class player over 3 or 4 years. It's just it's a different kind of weight category, I suppose, weight class of footballer.
Lovely stuff. Well, hopefully Seb's going to stick around and have a bit more of a chat with us about some more transfer targets. And we'll be back after this. So that's our recent business. Of course, everyone wants to know about future transfers, and Chris has done a mailbag this week, so head there for some more detailed answers. But in the meantime, Chris, Hugo Etiquette, the palindromic footballer, that appears to be well and truly on the back burner now, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, we spoke about it a little bit last week, but Hugo Etiquette was someone Newcastle tried to sign in January. They had a deal basically agreed with the club, Roms, and then on deadline day, it collapsed, didn't happen. They maintained contact. There was hope for months on end that they were going to sign him, and basically they've become very frustrated, primarily dealing with the agent, and whether or not Ekitike wants to come is a point which has been debated. I think behind the scenes, I think some of Newcastle feel he is, or at least have been given indications strongly that he wants to, whereas the agent has been difficult to deal with, and other people are suggesting. I mean, Oscar Garcia, who's the Roms manager, came out the other day and said that he might leave for someone like Real Madrid or Barcelona, but he's not going to leave for anyone else. So as things stand, Newcastle have become frustrated by it. They've stepped back from that deal. And as I said last week, I wouldn't completely rule out something happening later in the window if Newcastle don't sign someone, he doesn't go somewhere else. But there's certainly a lot of frustration around it, and Newcastle are actively pursuing other targets, or at least considering what they're going to do next. They have other targets. They've thought about one of whom is Armando Broya at Chelsea, who spent last season on loan at Southampton. They've basically asked, as they did a few months ago, Chelsea to let them know what the plan is for Broya, and that they are interested in potentially taking him. He's just one option, though. They have others. They still want a right-sided forward. Mm. They want a centre-forward. Yeah. And they're basically having a little bit of a pause to think, how can we maximise the remaining part of the budget we have left to make sure we add enough goals to the team? Because that has and remains a beating the, that's been the priority, and it remains a priority. They've signed 3 defensive players so far this summer. All players how wanted, all strengthen the squad. Mm. But Newcastle need goals, and that's very much what they're looking for now.
Seb, one of the names that's been mentioned in link with Newcastle quite a lot has been Moussa Diaby, and a player you'll know an awful lot about, obviously playing over there at Leverkusen. What is the sort of quality that he would bring if he was to come to Newcastle? And is there any chance of that sort of transfer happening?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a chance of it happening. It would cost an absolute fortune to get him out of Leverkusen. I think the highlight for me from watching this season is his kind of relationship on the pitch with Patrick Schick. I think they work together very, very well. Diaby is someone who, like, a lot of people kind of fall into the trap of kind of bracketing him as like that typical wide forward, like that inside forward. And he is dynamic, but he's not really someone that beats players as much as, you know, it's assumed at least. He's creative and thoughtful with the ball. His timing is really good. Like, his attacking production is excellent. Like, he no doubt be a very, very good player. I kind of personally prefer him playing off the left. I have done at Leverkusen at least, and I wonder whether that's quite the right player. Like, I obviously think Sam Maximan is better off the left than he is the right. I don't think I've seen him play much off the right. He looks also. You want to put a player like that in a position where he can drive towards the box, really, don't you? Off the touchline rather than towards it. Great player. Not sure he's quite the right one, and for the fee as well, Leverkusen. I think I'm right in saying that right at the beginning of the summer, right at the end of the German season even, Leverkusen were pretty definitive about neither Schick nor Diaby leaving. So because of the nature of German clubs, if you go back on something like that, it's not a great look with the fans because of the kind of the levels of accountability. It's not like you just, you know, you have to face the fans in German football. That's the nature of it. That's the way it's been built. You can't just, you know, be a silent man. You can't be... I can't think of any examples of that in Newcastle's history, of course, but you can't do
not,
that.
Not one. No,
nah,
not
can't, one. Nah, can't. Definitely have to go not. A long way back for that. But yeah, super player. Don't know if he's the right one.
Chris, Diaby, is there anything that you can tell us about that? And I know you've said the club like him, but it would take an awfully massive bid to prize him away from Leverkusen, wouldn't it?
They really like Diaby, and in terms of going into the summer, he was the top, if not, well, certainly one of the top targets for that, for a sort of wide forward position that they're looking for. They like the fact that he creates goals and he scores goals, which Newcastle don't have enough of. Miguel Almiron finished the season as the right-sided forward, and for all his pressing ability and ability to carry the ball and pace that Newcastle value, he doesn't provide enough of an end product. Ryan Fraser added some, and again, that work rate's there, but still not quite the capacity Newcastle want, or at least they want more competition for places there. At the minute, certainly early on, they've been spooked off by the demands for Diaby. I think they were quoted sort of €60 million, or that they were basically told to take that sort of ballpark figure. I don't know exactly what valuation they put on him and what they think is realistic, and it may depend on what they do with a centre-forward. If they can sign a younger centre-forward on loan, it might give them more room to be able to go back and entice someone like Diaby. But as things stand, they are considering alternatives in that position as well. Jack Harrison, Leeds is someone they like, and I think they were going to move for him probably. If Leeds had gone down, he had a release clause, as Rafinha did. Rafinha they really liked as well, but were always realistic enough to think that he probably wanted to go to someone like Barcelona or Chelsea, where it looks like he's going to end up probably at the former potentially. So Newcastle have a lot of options. Musa Diaby is very much above the near the top of the ones that they like. But as things stand, I think it's looking unlikely that he will come unless Newcastle really can test Leverkusen's want to keep him. I also think that they've had at least a few indications that maybe Diaby wouldn't be overly keen on the idea of going to Newcastle at this stage. He wants Champions League football, which obviously they can't offer. So as things stand, maybe he's one to watch, but right now it's nothing. There's nothing imminent or anything around that one.
This is going to be another issue, isn't it, Seb, about attracting these players? There's going to be players who don't want to come to Newcastle at this point in time, regardless of the project or however much money is floating around, because they simply don't have access to European football at the minute.
Yeah, it's difficult for players. It's also, let's remember, it's a World Cup year. So you don't quite know what Newcastle's going to be. Like, you can base it on what they were towards the end of last season and feel pretty good about it, sure. But if you're someone like Musa Diaby, like, Leverkusen qualified for the Champions League. Leverkusen finished the season by playing quite well, and like, they've kept a lot of their good players in place. Florian Wirtz, who I think is one of the most talented players in German football, had a very serious injury last season, but he's coming back. You got Schick, who's still there. Diaby, that's an amazing triangle to be part of. And also, this is a guy who originally grew up at Paris Saint-Germain. So you'd imagine that in the future, he'd have his eye on doing that. But then it's difficult. Also, for clubs outside London in the UK, it's always been like this, isn't it, for a certain type of player. Like, London's kind of an easy sell because a lot of players have friends there at other clubs. They know the city. They might have gone to visit there, all that kind of stuff. Newcastle, it's a brilliant place, but like, it's less visited by those kind of players. So it's harder, and you probably have to go a little bit further to convince players that it's a safe destination for 2 or 3 years. No doubt within that timescale, like, the results will start to speak for themselves, sell the expenditure, I'm sure. But until then, it's a little bit tricky. Hence the need for stepping stone players.
Absolutely. And there's a video about that available on Tivo right now, isn't there?
sounds rubbish, Taylor. I mean,
No, definitely not. Chris, the management have left the door open, though, haven't they, for a coup, or, you know, a term I hate, which is marquee signing. But if the right player comes available, there is money there. And, you know, this links to a question from Andre M., which was, how much more money can Newcastle spend in this window without breaching FFP rules? I'm presuming you don't know exact figures, but it's one of those, something that's in the back of everyone's minds at the minute.
It is, yeah, and I mean, it's something I touch upon in the mailbag on The Athletic, and we've spoken about sort of all summer. I mean, people respond with, no club ever tells you their budget, they're not going to reveal exactly what the fee is. And they're right, but there are also indications that you get from people in and around the club and from very well-placed sources as to roughly how much Newcastle think that they have to spend. Now, it seems that their kitty was somewhere between 70 and 90 million. They've spent around half of that so far in terms of money that they have to pay sort of up front and which they have to commit to now. And so really that gives them maybe sort of 40 or 50 million looking towards signing these. The two priority positions now, as I mentioned before, they want a striker, likelihood being a younger striker who can provide both competition and as an understudy for Callum Wilson, but who maybe is versatile enough to play anywhere across the front three, as well as a wide forward who can contribute more goals and more assists, someone like Diaby or Harrison, someone of the like. And so they need to now work out, how do they maximise that budget? And what with Ekitike, one of the things that suggested, and one of the ways that they're paying a little bit more for Botman, was that in installments they would pay more over time. And with Ekitike, they even wanted a loan with a sort of obligation to buy to begin with, possibly even 2 years down the line before they pay anything, because then they, in terms of financial years, in terms of FFP, it's very complicated, but it basically means you can backload the transfer, and it means you can kick that can essentially down the road. So Newcastle still do have flexibility in this. It's just how they maximise that and which clubs are willing to deal with them in that regard, and which positions they can work on in that. They are open to loan deals, but they may come about later in the window, and then that may free them up to spend more on one of those forward positions. But very much the focus now is on attacking positions. They haven't ruled out signing a midfielder as well, but if they end the window without at least signing one, but ideally two attacking players, then I think that there will be a negative in terms of what Newcastle have achieved in this summer, because that was the priority. The business they've done so far is excellent and have set a really good base, but they desperately need more goals.
Yeah, so goals are the key thing for Newcastle at the minute, and they need to add to what Callum Wilson can bring. And obviously with his world-famous mozzarella hamstrings, it's not always going to work, is it? We always run the risk of losing Callum for a certain amount of time during the season, and you need someone to come in who can put away 10, 12 goals and provide that kind of that support.
Yeah, Wilson's a super player though, isn't he? I mean, it's a real shame how many injuries like he's had. I mean, going back to that first season he had with Bournemouth,
yeah,
I remember him scoring a hat-trick at West Ham and then getting injured for 6 months after that, really, really quickly, really soon after. I think, you know, a couple of ways of looking at it, like, you can bring in another forward and add him to the pile with Wood and Wilson, or you can add, like, production somewhere else, like Chris mentioned, like, right forward, right midfield, that kind of area, because I think that's a position which just hasn't produced enough. Like, I think Ryan Fraser's a good player. I think Almiron's quite a good player. I don't think they're good enough for what the club wants to be, or at least they don't produce enough. There's not enough tangible output there. So that's one avenue. The Ekitike thing, I get it. I just, this guy went from being a talented young player to he's going to win 5 Ballon d'Ors within about 6 months. And that's always like, I understand, like, we're part of it, man. Like, the media do this all the time. We're completely to blame. I accept that. But it would make me nervous, because all of a sudden, you know, the expectation, the fee goes through the roof, and the sample size for what he is just isn't big enough.
He hasn't played enough games, has he?
I don't think so. And hey, listen, like, you know, maybe someone who really knows what they're talking about, like a proper scout, can correct me on why I'm wrong about that. But it always makes me nervous. Like, you see a guy and, you know, his YouTube highlights are cut up really nicely. But, you know, it's not the same, and given the kind of sums of money and the kind of players that would be available for that kind of money elsewhere, players with a little bit more proven ability and a bit more, you know, would give you a little bit more assurance in moving from the home country to a new country at such a young age. That's another factor. So yeah, but I don't think necessarily it's a need for a centre forward, because it's difficult, isn't it, if you balance that dynamic? Because what if Wilson stays fit? Like, maybe this is the season we play 38 games, and you've got, what, £25 million doing what exactly? It's hard. Like, I don't have an answer for that. It's tricky, and there's different ways of solving that problem, I guess.
And Callum Wilson always does that thing, and he did it this year when he came back, and he reminds you just how bloody good he is as a centre forward, and the positions he takes up, and the goals that he scores and stuff. And you think, oh God, if we could only keep him fit for the full year, we'd have some player on our hands there. He's a great player. I love watching him, and he absolutely terrorised Arsenal's defence in that last game of the season at St James's Park. He was something else, Chris, wasn't he?
He was, and I think that sort of has changed the strategy a little bit for the summer, because I think as of a few months ago, the thought was that when Callum Wilson wasn't fit and Newcastle really were struggling in terms of out and out goals, that they wanted a number 9 to really compete with them. But then he comes back and shows what he can do, and Newcastle sort of make inquiries about Dominic Calvert-Lewin or Ivan Toney or players like that, and find ridiculously high fees coming back, and they think about all the other things that they need to do in this summer window, and then maybe take a step back and think, well, if we can get a younger striker, someone who can grow with the club, or someone on loan while we think about what we want to do a bit longer term, that may be the answer. And that seems to have been the conclusion of Keane, because when Wilson's fit, he scores goals, but he also brings so much more. The team just looks transformed in attack when he's there.
Absolutely. Right then, I think it's time to move on, chaps. Seb, thank you so much for stopping by and joining us, and thank you for all the info and the fantastic Tifo videos as well. Keep them coming. Sensible transfers on Monday, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, we've got it's running all the way through July, but Newcastle will come out on Monday morning, I think.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been great fun.
No problem at all.
Yeah, thanks, Seb. And I hope you come to a Newcastle game again this season, because when you turn up, wonderful goals are scored in a away game. So I'm hoping that happens again this year.
I'm looking for your lucky charm that you can like, get him a season ticket, Chris.
Get him a season ticket. Cheers, Seb. Thanks a lot. Right then, Chris, let's wrap things up then before we finish. It was lovely speaking to Seb, wasn't it? Some really interesting stuff there, and those Tifo videos are brilliant as well.
Yeah, they do look really, really good. If you haven't ever watched any of them, I would very much recommend it, and certainly when the Newcastle sensible transfers come out next weekend. He won't even tell me who's on there, which is a bit frustrating from my point of view. You know, I know.
Just give us something. Just tickle me balls a little bit. Just give us something. Do you know what I mean? Not literally, obviously. Yeah. We've got a few little bits and pieces to round up before we go. You did a mailbag, Chris, didn't you, recently? And we're going to use some of the questions from that we didn't get around answering in the mailbag. So Luke R. has said, any chance of an article or a chat on the pod about Newcastle's dressing room spirit? It seems to have survived under new managers and would love to know more about where it comes from, who drives it on, and how they keep it going in the future. Eddie Howe's changed an awful lot, hasn't he, since he came in regarding the dressing room and, you know, the motivational signs and stuff like that, the posters, and it's all a little bit Ted Lasso, isn't it, at times, but it seems to be working.
It does, and I mean, to be fair, that dressing room spirit that Luke mentions has been there for a long period of time, even during the sort of during the Benitez era and during Steve Bruce's time. The dressing room, for a large part, they had the right characters there, and that was something after relegation in 2016. You had people such as Jamal Lascelles, obviously his captain, but also Matt Ritchie, John Joe Shelvey, Isaac Hayden, rebuilding this the dressing room essentially, and making sure that all the right characters there, not people who are just going to come to Newcastle as that quote unquote stepping stone club. What we were chatting with Seb about earlier, the likes of when Newcastle went through that period of where they were signing players from France who were signing, meaning basically thinking we're going to be here 18 months, 2 years, and then move on. And that policy went too far. Instead, that wasn't the way that it was. And so Newcastle have always had that strong core, those players who kept them in the Premier League and basically helped and bridge the gap until the takeover happened. And then Eddie Howe has come in and has changed maybe the motivation in terms of what they're going for and what they can look higher up the league to achieve. But also something big in January, and which has been big this summer as well, as targeting the right characters. Newcastle have turned down players that have been offered or have decided not to pursue players because of character references they've heard who they don't think are going to fit into exactly what they want. And so it becomes harder to maintain, in quote unquote, the more successful you become, the higher up you go in the league, the bigger egos you're going to bring in. There is going to be a balance to be struck there, but equally, Eddie Howe and Newcastle want to maintain that, the togetherness, that sort of defensive team spirit that you saw, which really served them so well during the first half of 2022. That is the priority. And Nick Pope, Matt Target, obviously they already knew about, but in Nick Pope and Sven Botman, they believe they have signed two players who very much fit into that model.
It looked like the buy-in from the players who came in January was key, wasn't it? They all came in and they believed and they all fought for the cause. And Kieran Trippier, I think, is probably the main one that I would talk about, where you say he embodies that team spirit, turning up at Southampton away with his moon boot on his crutches and stuff. And you just don't often see that kind of thing from players. But he sets a fantastic example, doesn't he? And we said he was almost a standard bearer for the team early doors, even though he didn't actually play that many games.
He is, and also what Newcastle have been trying to do as well is bring in people like Trippier who are additional leaders. Jamal Lascelles spoke about a few months ago where he felt at times he was the only sort of leader there, but Newcastle brought in Kieran Trippier. Dan Byrne is a real leader, and he has come in and it's the same sort of figure. So those players who, they will drive up standards, they understand what it means to play for Newcastle and in the Premier League, and they're going to continue to try and make sure that all players who come in understand that as well.
Absolutely. SE has also asked, how are we doing on the CEO? Remember how important their appointment was supposed to be? So what's happening? Christopher P, Barry O, and several others also asked about the CEO. Where are we with CEO at the minute? Obviously, Dan Ashworth's come in and has hit the ground running as far as transfers are concerned. But what's happening with the CEO?
Yeah, so a lot of people have been asking about this. I've had comments in the bottom of articles about it as well. Sporting director, which seems a big thing in terms of the football side, and then CEO for the business side. And it's a bit of a curious situation at the moment because since pretty much February sort of time, the message back has been that we're progressing with the CEO. We hope it'll happen in the not too distant future. And my understanding was they got down to a sort of short list of three, and they even, I think, were close or hopefully thinking they were going to appoint someone. I'm not exactly sure what's happened in the meantime. I've tried to ask the question to find out specifically what's going on there.
Yeah.
But the fact the club is operating in a decent sort of way, the fact that Amanda Staveley and Mia Dagadusi, the co-owners, have been sort of operating as, I think they describe themselves as interim chief execs, that has been working all right. But really, it is a position that Newcastle need to get sorted and need that long-term solution for. So I'm hoping that they are going to make progress in the course of the next few weeks and that will be announced. But yeah, it's been a bit of a strange one because even people in and around the club who thought it was going to be sorted by now, even they've sort of expressed a little bit of surprise and are unsure exactly what has gone on there.
You're going to have to do some digging, Chris, aren't you? You're going to have to do some detective work. Get yourself a trilby hat, a big, long, dirty Mac. Chris Wolf, private dick. Get yourself... do some proper investigative journalism. Chris Wolf, private dick sounds more like a classified ad.
Yes, I was going to say,
title,
yeah, I don't think anything.
Oh, my God. Right, okay. There's a mental image that nobody needs. So, training ground as well. Let's talk about that. There's been all sorts going on at the training ground. There's been some, people have seen bulldozers and diggers and all sorts of things going in and out of there. And they've been doing some work on improving the training ground. And let's be honest, it needs it. It looks like a leisure centre from the 1970s. So it's about time that they did a bit of work on the training ground. Where are we with that at the minute?
Yeah, so Newcastle in May applied to North Tyneside Council to basically upgrade parts of the training ground. The longer term plan is that they want to move entirely to a new state-of-the-art facility where they may house the academy, the women's team, the first team, medical, everything together. But for now, in the interim, they want to significantly upgrade the area they have, bring in likes of hydrotherapy pools, more recreational areas for the players, things like that.
Wheelie bins.
Remove the wheelie bins, move them on. But some of that has required, they've been waiting for planning permission, which has now been granted in the course of the past week. So hopefully building work will start soon with that. They've had to carry out a lot of environmental surveys, bat surveys and things like that, which you need to do on these sorts of buildings. Mm. And bird nesting, which will delay a little bit again how all of the work that can be done. But the pitches have been dug up and worked on and have been relayed. And also some of the foundations have been laid, which don't need to be... which don't require planning permission. So they've done a lot of that work already. And part of the reason why Newcastle are going away twice in terms of Austria and then to Portugal is because of the disruption that may be caused by the fact that obviously the training ground is basically a building site part of it. And so that will continue for the next few weeks and months. And so Newcastle are looking to move away from that distraction and to get a couple of good bodies of work in terms of training camps in Austria and Portugal over the coming weeks.
Excellent. And apparently you're going to be jet setting it across to Austria. Is that right, Chris? You're going to take in those pre-season games?
No, I'm just going there on a mountain bike. mountain bike world championship. No, I will be there for the pre-season games against Mainz and 1860 Munich, which are in Austria, a week on Friday. I mean, we're speaking on Monday the 4th. It's a week on Friday and then 2 weeks today. Newcastle playing those matches, so we'll be across to cover those. So I will relay what I see, hopefully see Sven Botman and Nick Pope make their non-competitive debuts.
It'd be lovely if we could chat to you live from Austria and you can be sat there in your little milkmaid's outfit with your bell around your neck.
I need to get that ordered, actually.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. Make sure you get the right size this time, though. Also, third kit has been confirmed. The green and white, much discussed third kit. You've written about the controversial colour scheme, and it's also produced a bit of grumbling from some fans in Germany as well about pre-season friendlies. This is an interesting conversation, this one, isn't it? Because a lot of fans are kind of just saying, it doesn't matter, it's a football shirt, it's not the end of the world. But there is some quite sort of rightly held concerns about this as well and what it stands for.
There are, and we've said before that we will have a longer discussion about this at some stage, and we will. We're at the end of a podcast now, so we're not just going to boil it down into sort of 3 or 4 minutes of just discussing this. But I will touch upon that column, which I wrote on the back of the strip, which is bears a striking resemblance to the Saudi Arabian kit. And just in terms of the fact that this is a conversation that isn't going to go away, and a lot of Newcastle fans were angered by this. I mean, I wrote within the article that I was pissed off writing it, and everyone was going to be pissed off reading it, and that turned out to be the case. So I thought it may well be.
I read some of the comments on the article, Chris, and yeah, fair play.
There's nearly 600 at the last time I think I looked at the comments at the bottom. But basically, it's something that the reality is that it's not going away as a topic. Newcastle and Saudi Arabia, obviously, Noon have been announced as the sleeve sponsor. They are Saudi Arabia. Well, they're based in Saudi as well. These links are going to continue to grow, and it's not something that the PIF are ashamed of, even if maybe other people arguably are, or some people are uncomfortable with the links that are there. And so it's something which I know frustrates some fans, or a lot of fans, other fans who are conflicted. There are other fans who feel very uncomfortable about the whole thing. I am sort of in the middle, and I don't know how I feel about all of it yet, but it is a conversation which is going to continue for those reasons, that really. Newcastle United has an identity of its own accord, and when that becomes blurred, that is where the issue really starts to arise. And so yes, we've seen both Mainz and 1860 Munich fans have been complaining about the fact that they're playing Newcastle in pre-season. Both the managers of both clubs have had to come out and address that because of the Saudi ownership. And it is very controversial in so many quarters, even if some Newcastle fans, they'll just talk about, well, it's just about football, why does it matter? Unfortunately, this is not going away.
No, absolutely not. And like you say, we will discuss that in greater length and in more detail in the future, definitely. Just a quick silly one before we finish off. Graham L, in combination with Peter D, said, who would win in a fight, one Dan Burn-sized Ryan Fraser or 100 Ryan Fraser-sized Dan Burns? What a terrifying prospect, 100 Ryan Fraser-sized Dan Burns.
Can you imagine them coming out as mascots together?
Just Dan Burn holding Ryan Fraser's hand. Did you see the post on Twitter this morning from the club as well, which was 33 days to go, and it was
very much enjoyed.
It was
that,
just the top of Ryan Fraser's head and Dan Burn standing next to him. It's amazing. It's really good. Good stuff.
I'll let you answer this one first, Taylor, and then I'll follow back you. What do you think?
I think you would be overwhelmed by 100 Ryan Fraser-sized Dan Burns, wouldn't you? You'd be absolutely overwhelmed by it. That's actually not that small, really.
Well, no, not if they all got each other's shoulders, and that's one like huge.
You've got no chance, Chris. You could probably dispatch maybe 10, 15, 20 of them pretty comfortably, but I think you'd very quickly become overwhelmed.
I imagine Ryan Fraser, though, is a bit niggly. I imagine if you made him sort of Dan Burn size, then that could also be a dangerous proposition there as well, though. But I think I'd probably agree with you.
Absolutely, yeah. Fair play, yeah. We answer all the important questions here on Pod on the Tyne, don't we? Let's
we
be honest.
Do. That's what we're here for.
No stone is left unturned. No stone. That sounded like I was from Washington there. No stone. Right. Okay. Well, Chris, I think what better place to finish than on that, on 100 Ryan Fraser-sized Dan Burns. Let's call it a day. And don't forget, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months right now. Go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Make sure you check out those TIFO videos as well. Sensible transfers coming out on Monday, and also the Stepping Stones video that Seb was talking about earlier on. Fantastic content there. Right, that's it, Chris. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you. And yeah, we'll see if George comes back from being angry and whether he decides that pre-season's ready for him next week or not.
He's going to be like a bear with a sore head, isn't he, who's just come out of hibernation when he first comes back. But I think what we should do is just treat him with kid gloves for a couple of weeks. You know, just pander to him a bit. Let him have his way. And just don't, let's just try not to anger him.
Well, I'm paying off to Austria, so I don't
know. So you're leaving me with him, are you? Thanks very much. Cheers,
I'll
mate.
Leave you with
Thanks
him.
For that. Brilliant stuff. Oh, well, okay. Well, one of us is going to be dead by the time you come back. Fair play. Well, Chris, I hope you enjoy Austria. It should be good fun.
Thank you.
No worries. And thanks very much to all of you out there for listening. And stick with us on Pod on the Tyne for all the latest news. We'll see you again very, very soon. Cheers. Take care. Bye-bye.
Batman. Batman! Who's your favourite Batman, Chris?
I mean, I haven't watched them sort of religiously, but probably credit Christian Bale. Well, I don't really watch the other ones, so I haven't really seen any of them. I'm not really a superhero sort of guy.
It is Michael Keaton, correct. Chris, do you buy ready salted Pringles as well, do you? Huh?
Oh, no. Barbecue.
The Athletic.